Up the Coast with Alex and Britt. We are officially on episode 10, recapping week 9 of the 2025 NCAA softball season. And of course, we're covering all things ACC softball. So Britt, let's first just talk quickly about rankings and RPI. So we'll just go top three of ACC standings. We've got Virginia Tech and Florida State tied in that top slot. They both have 11 wins, one loss. Clemson's coming in at number two. They're sitting 9-3 in conference. And then Stanford is in number three right now, and they are 8-4 in conference. Any thoughts about kind of where things are shaping up for conference play?
Virginia Tech and Florida State coming in at one spot. They're best teams in the conference right now. I think the surprising thing for me is Clemson coming in at number two. I remember watching them down in Clearwater, and it was like, oh, this is going to be a long season after losing, you know, that platoon of great players last year from Clemson. Is like, what are we going to get? And Clearwater did not look good, but they have definitely come into their own, found their identity, and they're playing great ball right now. So, you know, props to what John Rittman and that team's doing, because that's definitely a shocker to me, seeing them sitting at number two.
Yeah, I think the biggest word you used is identity. And I think that all great teams are going to have a sense of identity. And sometimes the first several weeks of season are spent figuring that out. So I've been really impressed in this last series that we'll talk about here in a minute, but that was a really big one for the Tigers. RPI, I know that this is kind of an interesting one all the time, just because you never know where the RPI is going to end up with final rankings and things like that. But typically, you feel pretty confidently like the top 30. If you're sitting in the top 30, you're pretty comfortable for postseason.
Yeah, I think in the past, that's been the sweet spot. But some years, they use RPI as a very heavy component into who gets into postseason. And other years, they use strength of schedule, which is part of RPI, but they just nitpick each year what's important to whoever's on the selection committee. But I think it's a good barometer for us to use to see who's sitting pretty and who has some work to do. Duke, Florida State, 5th and 6th in RPI. Virginia Tech coming in at 12. Clemson, 20th. Cal, 20th. And Virginia sneaking in at 28. So I think Virginia, Cal, they've got to finish strong if they want to secure their spot in the postseason. Stanford, I think, has a possibility of trying to get in that top 16 to be able to host, have to finish strong. Virginia Tech, they're definitely in. I think they have a really good argument already to host, and I hope they get the respect that they deserve finally in postseason. But again, they got to take care of business. And Duke sneaking in at that 5th spot. I feel like everybody had written off Duke for a while after that big blowout against Florida State, then dropping one to Syracuse. They have the hardest strength of schedule right now. So they've been putting in the work. So nobody needs to write off Duke.
No, never. But it'll be interesting always to see how it plays out. I'm really excited. And of course, this is a big factor just in how postseason does shape up. Of course, you use your big fancy words, barometer and everything like that. But just at the end of the day, you got to play a tough schedule and you've got to win a lot of games in that tough schedule. That's obviously going to help seal the deal.
And we know how much the SEC gets credited with, you know, getting all their teams in, even though, whatever, I won't go into it too much, but you definitely can't have any slip ups if you're in the ACC and want to host.
Yeah. So to kick things off, let's talk about what happened in Tallahassee this past weekend. First, big midweek game for Florida State. They played Florida last week. That was a fun one. The Noles came out on top. I always love a Gator win.
A Gator win?
Or I'm sorry, a Seminole win. Oh my God, a Gator loss. I'm like, what am I saying? A Seminole win, a Gator loss. Good God. So
that's awesome. No, on paper, they won. No matter what you say, your Noles won. What'd you think about that game?
It was great. I think that both pitchers were legit. Like, Florida State like went by the committee concept, which we knew they would. But Keegan Rothrock is the real deal. And I just think that Florida State did a good job of getting their swing off when people were on base and trying to capitalize. And the top part of that order for the Noles are like, and then you've got a lot of players that can get that one big swing, which is proving to work in their favor. And we know that for the Florida State offense and for like their win-loss column, hitting home runs is crucial for their victories. Like, they strongly feel like we've got to have somebody leave the yard if we want to win a ball game. It's just one of those statistics. And Jenai Kerr like did it twice. Yeah. And so like, she is coined like on some of the accounts and stuff that I follow, like FSU Barstool and stuff. It's like, she's the Gator Slayer. I think that's just so funny, because it's just like a great, you know, it's a great rivalry. It's always so much fun, no matter what happens in the game. Like, it's one of the best games to ever play in my opinion. And I'm sure you feel that way too about some of your rivalries. But
I think that's a great one. I think Florida State and Florida have been top of their league and in the top of the country for a long time. So to get to see them play in a midweek, it's big time softball.
Yeah. And that's the only time that Florida State will play this year, which isn't normal. Normally it's two games. And just so to have that one is crucial and to come away with the win for Florida State, not the Gators, is even better. So, and then they had a big series in Virginia this past weekend too in Tallahassee. So like a lot of good softball and a lot of quality teams and opponents that Florida State was playing this past weekend. And it was going to be a really big test, in my opinion, going into it. I knew that it was going to be a dogfight because Virginia has been a very good squad. What Joe Harden has been able to do with that program the last 9 years is super impressive. And she just is continuing to build and reload. Florida State did end up winning the series, but Virginia came out strong and took game one. And I think that caught everybody by surprise. Virginia won that first game Friday night, 2-0. And that was only the third time this season that Florida State has been shut out, which I think speaks very highly of her pitchers.
Yeah, I think going back to what you said, what Joe Harden's been able to do since her time there. I mean, Virginia was never a competitor in the ACC, really, till she got there, got the brand new stadium built, really getting the school to invest in softball. And she's investing in the development of her players. They get better each year. I think she's a great person to lead any program, doing a great thing there. But yeah, they came out, they were ready to go. And, you know, I was worried after the Notre Dame series. They went to Notre Dame last week and dropped that series. And you had your interview with Joe Harden, and we even talked about it. You know, this was the first time Virginia's like got a target on their back. And how do you handle that pressure of not being the underdog anymore, not being the person that's going to surprise somebody? And going into Notre Dame, they should have on paper swept that series, but then they dropped two and almost got swept, had to go into extra innings, take that third game. I think that was a good wake up call for them. Hey, yeah, we're good, but you know, we still have to show up and play. And then coming out and having that statement first game against Florida State to shut them out and get the win was good for that program. But they were competitive both game one and game two, and you were on the call, so I'd really like to hear more of what you saw in person.
Yeah, I think that, first of all, Courtney Lane and Eden Bigham combined to get that shutout in game one, and we knew Eden Bigham is legit. She's had a great career so far for Virginia, and she just continues to do that. She has a nasty rise ball, and then the changeup combo that she's really, I feel like, worked hard to master. It's pretty deadly. Like, it's hard to hit something up and in on your hands or up in general with some like heat and then something soft in a way that's just going to float, right? So it also kind of looks similar to coming out of the hand just a little bit, because it is more of that floater change instead of something like falling. And so it's just tough. But like I said, it was only the third time that Florida State offense had been shut out this season. And that should say a lot in itself. Jade Hilton at the top of the order, she's so good. I think the difference now too is she's also surrounded by some other really good hitters. And she's got a great nine hole in Kaylin Jones that can kind of set the table at the bottom half. And that was one of the things that Coach Harden said was, if our bottom half of the order can go, we go. Because we know that our top half is pretty competitive and takes care of business consistently. So Jones on the nine hole was super impressive. She was their left fielder and just like really caught my eye. She was just always doing something. And then to have Kelly Eyre and a couple others around Hilton at the top part of the order too, it's super beneficial, because you know that when you've got a great hitter, you've got a protector with other great hitters that can apply that pressure.
Yeah, I thought something, even though Virginia dropped game two, I thought it was interesting. You said one of the Florida State coaches, I don't remember who it was, said that, you know, Virginia outplayed them 12 out of the 14 innings. Yeah. They played better in 12 out of the 14 innings. Florida State, you know, is always clutch when they need to be, and everybody's been a victim to that. So dropping game two, they still played a good game, a competitive game against Florida State, and then Florida State just came alive in game three and 13-2. And one thing to note is Savannah Henley did not pitch, correct? And she's great. I really enjoy watching her pitch. So not sure what's going on there. Hopefully Virginia gets her back, because they need her back, especially going three games. You've got to show. I bet if she was back, it would not have been a blowout on game three. But Florida State seeing the same couple pitchers over and over, they're going to Florida State it.
And that's exactly what Coach Harden said, even like in that post game interview. Like, I was reading through some of just like the press conference stuff like that they do. And that's what she said. She's like, hey, game three, we already know it's going to be like a dogfight, because both of our sides have seen everything that the other has to offer, because we didn't get to see Henley throw. And she is that other pitcher that gets the majority of the innings with Bigham. They split time, and again, just not having that arm to go back to. But I do think, again, Kuzo and Lane like threw really well, and just kind of trying to figure it out from there. But there's been some really good stuff for the Cavalier team. They're doing a good job having total team effort. Florida State, like they do, like you said, clutch. They just know how to win in the big moments. And unfortunately, but fortunately for them, unfortunately for sometimes opponents, is you can play better than them more often than them. But if you give them opportunities to threaten, they might come out on top because they can just do that, right? With big swings, big moments, they apply a lot of pressure. But I actually did see Virginia do that as well on the base path and stuff. So I love to see the small aspects of the game being taken care of like that. Also, Coach Jo Harden did pick up her 200th win at Virginia at the head of the program. So really good stuff. That was the Friday night victory, her 200th. So love it.
Congratulations.
Yeah, good stuff all around. But Clemson, Stanford, what do you have on this one? Because this one was crazy.
It was. That was how's Clemson going to respond going out west, right? And then also, bigger story, Rittman returning to Stanford. They didn't leave on the best of terms. But I think enough time has passed, and Alistair played for him, and Ramona Shelburne from ESPN was there throughout a first pitch. So it was kind of they did a good job welcoming him back to the place where he had so much success, taking Stanford to the Women's College World Series, putting them on a map, and really gave them the foundation they needed to continue to be great. You know, it was a back and forth series. I think it's kind of what we expected. It was a coin flip who was going to win this one, but based on how Clemson is currently playing, they went on to win the series, technically an upset. First loss for Stanford at home, but Julia Noller and Maddie Moore, they don't stop. They don't slump. They're competitive. They're into it. I will tell you that Stanford, unfortunately, only had the one all nine camera, so it was really hard to sit there and watch. Jenna Becerra was on the call. She did a great job of telling us things that we couldn't see. But, you know, these are very similar teams. I think they can hit, they can play defense, they are piecing things together in the circle, and Clemson came out on top.
Yeah, really good stuff. Addie Moore, Julia Noller, I know you mentioned them, but they're like the fiery players. I feel like we saw the bat flip a couple weeks ago, and just like the big moments, like they are that passion, I think, for their team. And this isn't a Clemson team that's been known for that. Like, I feel like they've always been like cool, calm, collected. But this is a team that gets fired up, and I love it, because like there were moments as a player, like I feel like I was pretty chill, but there were moments that would fire me up a lot more. And so to be able to kind of like wear that passion and show your emotion like that to your teammates, like it really does allow people to buy in too. But good stuff for them. I think Kylie Chung was also really impressive for Stanford. She had a good weekend. She sits in the bottom part of the order. But just again, like the bottom half is crucial, just because your top half is going to be on paper your most statistic players. But if you can get your bottom half going, like there's going to be some good things ahead. And then of course, we know that Taryn Kern in that leadoff spot for Stanford is just legit. Yeah, you said it best.
I think the bright spot was Alyssa Houston throwing the one hitter in game two. Still had the five walks. That's her one problem, is her control. A lot of walks, a lot of hit by batters. She's a freshman, but she's developing. You can see her getting better, getting more control, and to one hit Clemson is really good. She's got a bright future there. So they got to be excited about Alyssa Houston, what she's doing in the circle, because that is their missing piece. But they've been able to piece it together and still have a really successful season.
Definitely.
Go ahead.
I was going to say one last note, kind of like piggybacking off of your comment on the walks and stuff. Stanford did out-hit Clemson in every game this weekend. Mm-hmm. But even though they out-hit them, they still, again, Clemson had the timely hitting when it mattered. And Stanford did walk people more often in all of the games except the last game. They did both walk four people. So again, like the note there is like, you don't always have to out-hit somebody and do whatever. Like if you can take advantage of people getting on base, free passes, that kind of stuff, again, there's always a will and a way to win. So
yeah, more games are lost than they are won. You give up free bases, you know, the team's not necessarily taking it in control and beating you, but can't give them up anything for free. One last thing about Stanford I thought was really cool. They are attempting to break the crowd record of 12,566 set back at the World Series. They are playing in their football stadium, as you remember, and they're calling it the Big Swing, April 19th at 1 p.m. against Cal. They're trying to Stanford football stadium. So I hope they do it. That'd be awesome.
I hope they do too. That is so cool. So cool. So, okay. North Carolina was in Durham this weekend. We've got some interesting stuff on this one, but Duke did walk away with a sweep of the Tar Heels, Cassidy Curd, has now thrown 7 complete games. Not the norm, I feel like, in college softball right now. Because even your pitchers that are getting the majority of the innings are splitting time a little bit, especially like right at the end. Also, I have like been newly introduced to some phrases. Britt, you may know them already, but forgive me. Like soft opens, instead of like a closer and instead of going with your ace from the start, like you're getting like a soft open. So you're kind of like flipping the script. If I can get somebody that's not always like my ace or my everyday starter to get the first 6 to 9 hitters, then I'm going to come in and bring in like that, the big guns. So interesting. Yeah,
I like that. And you see Duke doing that too, right?
Yeah, you do. You do.
Get Danny in there. And, you know, they mentioned on the broadcast that Curd was coming back from a back injury. So I think we've been concerned about her performance, and maybe she was dealing with the back and she's finally healthy again. And Danny, props to you for getting them through that, you know, taking a major role. And, you know, Duke was on fire at the plate, though. In the first two games, the teams combined for 43 hits. Duke had 20 hits in game 2 alone.
I saw that. Yeah, that's insane.
That's just like, what? And then that you mentioned they hit 7 doubles in what was it, the first game? In the first inning.
Yeah.
6 doubles.
Game 2, yeah. So they set a program, like they tied their program record hitting 7, or I'm sorry, no, they set the program record hitting 7 doubles in one game. 6 of them came in the first inning. So talk about getting off to a hot start.
I feel like I'd rather somebody hit 7 home runs off of me, like 7 solo shots. But if you're just going to hit gap after gap after gap, yeah, that is just miserable, because then you're just scoring a run and keeping that momentum. They had something to prove, and their bats were swinging it, man.
Yeah. And I think the thing with UNC right now is like, we know they can hit as well. And they've got some good pitching, but again, it can't typically all ride on one person. And this is a Tar Heel offense that sits in the top 5 of the country in batting average. So again, as a team, they're getting the job done. But on the other side, they've committed errors, at least one error in each game. I know you noted that one, and just kind of how important it is to take care of the softball and play fundamental softball.
And it was like missed fly balls in left field, like dropping major play, easy plays that should have been made that cause big problems. And Duke played error free. And I've been cautiously optimistic all season. People are giving Carolina a ton of credit for their offensive numbers and whatnot. And yes, you still have to hit the ball, put the ball in play, run. They have power, they have speed, they have a complete lineup, but their strength of schedule is 79th in the country. So they have not been playing top competition out of ACC play. And Duke has the number 1 strength of schedule, and people are kind of shying away from Duke, saying maybe they're not having the best, they're not going to make a long run in the postseason. But they've been challenged, whereas UNC really hasn't been. You know, Megan Smith in her second year as a head coach, I don't really fault her for having a softer out-of-conference schedule, because you don't really know what you're coming into, right? You want to be able to have success, build confidence, and stay above 500 to give yourself postseason hopes. I think next year, that out-of-conference schedule has got to ramp up a little bit to get these players where they need to be, because, you know, 41, an RPI of 41 with that strength of schedule and no big wins isn't going to help their postseason.
Yeah. So just, I think, figuring it out and kind of working from there. Like you said, you can't fault them because you don't know what you don't know, but definitely looking ahead, like you want to take care of business when you can, when you do have some of these games, like you can't let them fall. Just like you said, like because of the conference in general, like knowing how important like the RPI, strength of schedule, all that is, like you got to just handle stuff when you can. One last note just on Duke. Well, real quick, the offense, like you said, explosive. You've got like Jada Baker swinging a really good bat this year. Like she's not been historically known for her offense. She was a really good defensive player, but now coming alive in the batter's box. And then you've got Amina Vega still doing well. Figuring out that consistency is the biggest piece for players like her that have found success early in their career and are looking to kind of continue and replicate that is very hard. So
another one, Anna Gold. She had
Yeah, I mean, she came back alive. Like
she's been hibernating, I think, the first half of this season. She has the program record for career home runs, and we've been waiting for her to see her breakout, and I think we're seeing it.
Yeah, for sure. So good stuff. And then, of course, at the top of the order, they're really good with Jennings and just a lot of good sticks. But Cassidy Kerr did record all 3 wins in the weekend. Again, that's awesome. That's interesting to me. But you want to talk real quick about what we saw on Twitter? Or on X.
Yes, there was a post that showed, we're getting a little spicy, I think. And we all I know is what we saw on Twitter, the video. I am assuming it's alleged, let me use alleged, that the video has Corey Lyon, the third base coach, assistant coach for North Carolina, during either the start of an inning, during a timeout, walking across and deliberately, I think it's pretty obvious, wiping the inside line of the batter's box. Carolina has a lot of slappers. This one got caught on tape. And by rule, you know, that's a ball, a strike on the batter. You do it again. Again, ejections and whatnot. It didn't look good. It did not look good. But also, you know, Taylor White putting it on Twitter and tagging another ACC coach in it. It just, one, I don't think that's handled well from a coaching professional's perspective. And then me as a Tar Heel and Taylor as a Tar Heel, like, let's have a conversation with our Tar Heels. Like, let's, before we put them on blast, maybe there's a whole lot going on that I don't know about. And there probably is. But just, that's social media for you. Look, you put it on social media, everybody's going to be able to have their own thoughts about it and their own opinions. I think something like that is not, doesn't look good, shouldn't do it, shouldn't be done. But I think we can handle that in-house a little bit better. But hey, it's cutthroat ACC now, right?
It is. And to your point, like, I think you raised just a really good point of like the unprofessionalism of just like what actually happened and everything. Like, doing that again, knowing that you're not supposed to do that, you're also supposed to be like penalized if you do swipe the dirt and whatever to mess up the chalk. But like you said, we also don't know. Maybe that's been like a topic of conversation. Maybe it's been something that's been brought up numerous times before. Who knows? Like, and so I think just to play like devil's advocate, and like you already mentioned it, but just saying like there could have been conversations that have led up to this that like have created now this visibility and this frustration of like, yeah, that's not okay, and we're not going to tolerate it. So who knows? But I want to know more. Yeah. I actually do believe that occurred during a review. Out of view of the umpires, but everybody else saw it. So I think that's another piece that it's like, yo, like, that's not okay. Because if you're going to do it, at least do it in front of everybody and take the penalty. And I don't know, like, go from there, right?
Or do what everybody else does and have your slapper come up there and, you know, play with the dirt. I see that all the time and it never gets caught. And we know what you're doing, but at least you're doing it in a, I don't know, discreet manner, yeah. Softball related, just getting set in the box, whatnot. But yeah, that's interesting. I want to see if anything else comes of it.
We'll see. We'll see.
Drama.
I know, like the tea, but I don't want art. Like, I don't want to be in tea, but I want to know tea sometimes. So it's like
an
ooh. Okay. You said it. Love it. All right. The Hokies were at NC State this past weekend. And they also had a midweek against Liberty. They won that. I think it was fantastic. Again, we talk about midweeks and the importance of it, especially when you're playing really good teams. Liberty's a top 25 school, and to get a shutout over them, Emma Lemley got the complete game, like, so good. But no surprise, the Emmas are rocking.
The Emmas are rocking. This wasn't a big storyline series. It wasn't exciting. You'd expect Virginia Tech coming and sweep, but it's so important for them to do it. Like, mm-hmm. They cannot have any slip-ups because everybody's going to be so quick to run away from Virginia Tech just based on what we've seen in the past and what's happened in the postseason. So they're taking care of business. And Lemley and Mazzarone threw game three, complete game, shutout. I think she gave up two hits. And Virginia Tech still swinging the bat. Corey McMillan dropping bombs. You've made a note that she hit 7 home runs in their last 12 games. So I mean, they're swinging it and they're going to, and now they have the pitching. And coach Pete DeMore said that this is the best defense he's ever had. And going back to his even Missouri days, like, this is the best defense. So having the defense, the pitching, the hitting, and being able to take care of business when you're supposed to. Nice work.
Yeah, agree. You know, I love my hitters. Corey McMillan, you said that she's swinging a really good stick. She has it. And we know that Virginia Tech is like, they love the long ball. They mm-hmm. hit a ton of home runs. They have for the last however many years, and they probably will continue to. They have homered in their last 12 games, which again, I think that's important for some schools. I already mentioned Florida State being another one. But McMillan specifically doing it in 7 of the last 12, like, she's hot. She's team leading 16. She sits obviously in the top of the country. Like, she's not leading the country. I think somebody from maybe Ohio State or Marist or something has like 18, which, you know, that's a lot right now. So, but definitely leading the ACC and swinging a good stick. But Yeah, I don't think NC State, we've talked about it. Like, they're still fighting their own. It's Coach Leftwich's second year in the program. Like, she's figuring it out. She's got some really great talent, some really great potential, just trying to capitalize on it and, you know, navigate it and ensure that she's always maximizing her players' capability. And she's going to continue to do that. I just think it's going to take time.
Yeah, for sure. They're on the right path. And I think NC State just hired a new men's basketball coach and threw a ton of money at it. So I think NC State's going to show some even more financial support across the boards for the sports, which this day and age, you can't win without it.
Yep. Have to. So let's talk about those Cal Bears. They played one game and won versus Nevada. They did announce, Britt, you want to mention this one?
Yeah. They only played one game this weekend, but the big news out of Berkeley is that they are finally getting their new stadium. I'm pretty sure they were supposed to break ground on a stadium back in 2010 and then again in 2019, but now it looks real. So it's supposed to be ready to play in season 2027. It's going to seat over 1,500 people. They are going to have a turf outfield. I found that interesting because they are in California, but maybe it's a maintenance cost efficiency thing. Interesting to me. Do you like turf? Playing on turf?
I actually do like playing on turf. I played a lot of my pro career on turf. I mean, it's different. I don't mind it. Yeah.
I wasn't a fan. Maybe the Rosemont turf. You remember how bouncy it was playing in Chicago?
Yeah. That was different. That's a good turf.
I mean, we need the good turf. So, no, props to Cal. They are coming back in the national spotlight and being rewarded with success, getting a new stadium, new scoreboard. So, great for them. I'm not sure what they're going to do next season, where they're going to play, why this is being renovated, but good for them.
Yeah, love it. So love to see the money getting poured into these programs. And that's, like you said, that's the most important thing for anybody to go out there and be able to compete, because you've got to be able to keep up with the teams that are getting funds from their school, from donors, who knows where, right? And so investment in the sport is everything, truly, at this point.
And I think a great thing that's happening right now is that softball's outgrowing their current infrastructure across the board. I mean, I was in Tennessee this weekend to watch that series, and we had to park like 2 miles away and shuttle in, and then Florida State sells out and they're pitching their parking garage for people to go watch games. And that's great. And the only problem for me is I don't see schools upgrading. I don't see them making that investment when we're in the NIL era. Like, you'd rather put $50,000 in a pocket of a player than upgrade their stadium, because, you know, you're more likely to get that top player if you're paying them some good money than you are if you have a nice scoreboard. I don't know. I hope it doesn't turn that way, but I think it is.
And I could do more research into this. And again, I just know it because I know these people. I'm there a lot, whatever. Like, I have an interest in it. But I do know, like, one of the things that Lonnie at Florida State did with her contract renewal was tell the school, like, as part of my contract, I want some of our money to be spent in renovations.
Oh, good.
That way you let NIL take care of NIL and different donor pots and things like that, that, you know, come into the school or are divvied up, however that works. I don't know the intricacies, but I think that there's ways around it if the school is serious about keeping their leadership as well. Britt, you could have stood on the train tracks out there in Knoxville, right?
By the sewage facility.
Yeah.
That's right across the street. I tell you what, I didn't have the best time in Knoxville, but they're a good team. They were fun to watch. Carlin Pickens was fun to watch. She's throwing heat. I don't think she was throwing 78 this weekend, but she was throwing heat.
Too funny. So some midweeks coming up. You coined them as their must wins. We've got to, because at this point in the season, we're literally on the tail end, 3 weeks left or so, maybe-ish. Not even two and a half.
I think three ACC series left.
Okay. But they're must wins, because right now is when midweeks actually start to shut down for some teams for the most part. And any ones that they have aren't going to be like huge bangers, right?
Yeah. I think the only one this week that the ACC has is Virginia going to Liberty. Liberty's got an RPI of 34. So this could help them actually. Mm-hmm. Winning this game could help them in RPI and postseason. They got to take care of business and treat this like it's an ACC game. Then, like, Louisville is going to Boston College, not necessarily playing for postseason, but playing for a chance to get into postseason by going to the ACC championship. Right now, they're at the 11th spot. I think Louisville's just ahead of Boston College. Both are 3-9. And even with the addition of Cal and Stanford, they didn't expand the field of the ACC tournament. So now three people are going to get left at home. And Syracuse at Virginia. Virginia can't drop one. Syracuse, they've been snipers out there, stole a game from Duke. I mean, they can do it. with Madison Knight and whatnot, but they got to take care of business.
Yeah, for sure. Taking care of business is going to be the name of the game the next couple of weeks. Pitt is at Duke, so Durham, home back-to-back weeks. Georgia Tech is at UNC. And then Florida State travels out to Cal. So Clemson versus Stanford this past weekend was the first time we've seen a team really travel that far, whether out to the West or from the West to the East, and play well.
Mm-hmm.
So Florida State, we'll see what they've got going out yonder.
They went out to Oregon earlier. And yeah, they dropped two to Oregon and got shut out twice. So maybe there'll be some manipulation in the schedule and things like that. But I do want to go back to the Georgia Tech UNC games. This is huge for Georgia Tech. Huge. They're sitting right there on the edge of, you know, that comfortable RPI ranking. So if they can go in and take care of business at UNC, it will definitely help them. Dropping a game will hurt Georgia Tech.
Yeah. So crazy stuff ahead, as always. The ACC just keeps getting better and better, and so does our coverage.
We try. We're trying.
We're trying. We're trying. But of course, as always, subscribe to wherever you watch your podcast. If you've got questions, recommendations on topics, anything like that that you want to know, let us know. We're always super curious too. Like, so if we can find things out, we'll always work our hardest to do so. But give us a like, give us a follow. And as always, thanks for your support. And we're going to cover as much ACC softball as humanly possible. So, see ya.